We've been talking on meditation and how do we do meditation, the purpose of meditation, the benefits of meditation. This cosmic assistance, we call it cosmic assistance. Cosmic comes from the word cosmo, and cosmo more or less means universal, or it may embrace more meaning than just universal. But we're living in the world with materiality and desires. So whenever in the world of materiality and desires, there is a certain location you live in. We live on materiality, which means that there are things that are perceptible to us. That is things that's made up of neutrons, electrons, protons, atoms. This is material. But all existence is not just material. It's also non-material, metaphysical. It's above physical. And sometimes you call it spiritual. The reason why I want to get back to cosmic existence is we have to know our positioning. Where are we? Where do we originate? More or less like that. Where did we come from and what did we end up with? These are the basic questions. We try to take a look at cosmic existence. When we look at cosmic existence, we're looking at the 10 realms of cosmic existence. And we have what we called the 6 wellings. 6 wellings is the 3 vicious realms, departed spirits, or sometimes call them ghosts, animals, and hell realms. There's also the 3 benevolent realms, the heavenly beings, people call them guardian angels, or people, or sentient beings living in heaven above us. In other words, their existence is much more enjoyable, much more pleasurable than us. Asuras, human beings, we are in this level, human beings. In the ancient sutras, there's only 5 wellings. The asuras is classified in each. In other words, there are asuras in human beings, asuras in heavenly beings, there are also asuras in hell beings, in animal beings, and in departed spirits. So there are only 5, they classify only 5. But in some sutras, they classify 6. Now, when a sutra classifies 6 wellings, that asuras refers to heavenly being asuras. I don't know if you understand what I mean. In human beings, there are also asuras, vicious human beings. For example, in the atrocities of wars, the imposed atrocities of wars on humans, they started genocide. For example, in the Second World War, Hitler, for example, or the Nazis, they are the asuras of human beings. That's commonly recognized now. So there are asuras in human beings. There's also asuras in animals. Some animals are predators, are hunters. They like to kill weaker animals. And some animals are tame, so there are asuras in animals too. There are asuras in spirits. Some ghosts are helpful, benevolent ghosts, and some are vicious ghosts that are harmful to humans. So there are asuras in the 5. But the asuras here are heavenly asuras. They enjoy all the blessings that they receive in heavens, but they are very competitive and they are very jealous. They're always fighting with other heavenly beings. So we are in here, just to summarize it, we are the 6 wellings, and we are in this 6 realms. 6 realms or the 6 wellings. We are here. And this is a world with materiality, world with desires. We are here. You have to know who you are. We are human, and we have been reincarnating. We are in samsara, going through life after life, life and death and life and death until now. When I talk about this, some people are very interested. Oh, that's where I came from. Some people, so what? It doesn't touch their heart. They don't know, how do we get out? How do we get out from this world, you know, world of desires? They're not too interested. They're only interested in food, eating, enjoyment, and that's where they spend the rest of their life. There are many different kinds of people. If you are interested in the spiritual level of humanity, you'll be interested in this kind. People who are looking for liberation. People have been suffering, and people have seen a lot of sufferings. They want to liberate from sufferings, not only of themselves, of all the others. They're more compassionate people. They're more interested in this. People who are not compassionate, what do they care? Yeah, I mean, I'm a human being, so what? When I die, I just die. Most people are like that, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And these are the six worldlings. And how about these here? This, the four sages, saints. These are out from samsara. They already have taken the spiritual path, taken enlightenment. They already have walked out from life and death. Pratyeka Buddha, Sravakas, Bodhisattvas, and Buddha. And in Sravakas, there are four levels, the Sotapanna, Sakridagaman, Anagaman, and Arahats. These are the four sages. They already have liberated themselves from samsara. No more life and death for them. No more sufferings for them. And more than just that, the Buddha and Bodhisattvas, after they have liberated themselves from life and death, they came back to life and death. They already have liberated themselves, but they don't want to leave all these folks behind. They came back to liberate others in many, many forms. And the Sravakas and the Pratyeka Buddhas, they are more, I already have been liberated. I'm okay. And they don't take a lot of interest in liberating others. They don't take that as a mission, as something that I am one with all the sentient beings. If they're not liberated, I don't want to be liberated. I want to be with them. I want to go back. I want to go back to save all my folks. I can't just liberate myself. Now, it's okay that the Sravakas and Pratyeka Buddha, they're already in Nirvana. Okay. But these Buddha and Bodhisattvas, they cannot leave sentient beings. They always want to go back. They always want to help. These are already liberated. So, you know your positioning. We are our position, and we are in here. We're in human beings in here. And do you consider that you are fortunate if you started to study the Buddha's teaching, knowing how to liberate yourself and how to liberate others, emancipate yourself, emancipate others? But there are a lot of people who never have a chance to know about these things. There are other people who are still submerged themselves in samsara, in life and death. There are people who involve themselves with heavy karma that pull them down to the animal realm, spirit realm, hell realms, and human beings realms. Heavenly beings and asuras, of course, they are in a much higher level. They do not have as much sufferings. They have very little sufferings, but they're not completely emancipated yet. They are still going through samsara. In human beings, it's a mixture, you and I. Some people suffer more than others. The Second World War, the atrocities of war killed 20 million people. It's always good sometimes if you get on YouTube or Google, go back to see how humans can inflict sufferings on others. They created a lot of karmic energy that pulled them down. First World War, millions of people got killed. In some countries, within 1 or 2 months, a genocide took 300 million people, their own folks. 300,000 people. They killed themselves. and plus human kills animals, and animals kills human. They are killing each other. And these are the wise people who wanted to tell us, get out from there. Help others to get out. But how many people are interested in it? So are we not fortunate to know about a Buddhist teaching that we can do something about it? Some people are more compassionate in doing it than others. Yes, I know. I still have to. I know, but I'm learning, but I still go through all these sufferings and life after life. So it's very important that you're very conscientious about it. Don't just take a very negative approach. I know all these things. I go to the temple every Saturday and I meditate. And I'm not bad to people. I enjoy life, you know. I still drink, I still eat meat, I still support killing animals for food. I still have my relationship with others, a man with woman with men, and I know a little bit of Buddhist teaching. You think that is good enough for you to get away from suffering? Be conscientious. Liberate yourself in this life. Do not go into the next life. All right, so these are our positionings. Let's take a look at a self, at a human being in here. And why is he a human being? What is he doing when he's a human being? Or animals, whatever. We look at cosmic existence. We look at here a self. The universe is broken down into materiality and spirituality. There's only two major dharmas. Materiality is everything we see, as minute as neutrons, electrons, as big as a gigantic mountain, oceans. All this is material. They're made up by elements and atoms. And on the other side is spiritual, but that's the whole universe to be considered. Now we're considering, why don't we consider a smaller universe? That's a self, that's us. Everyone is a small, minute universe by itself, the self. What does the self make up of? You and I, we make up of the body, which is a matter, body cells, your kidney, your lung, your hair, your bones, and everything. That's material. You hold a material part of you. You also hold a spiritual part of you. That's perception, conception, volition, and consciousness. You are make up by the five skandhas, matter, perception, conception, volition, consciousness, the five matter that make up of you. This is the body and this is the mind. You have that. Do you realize that you have that? The Buddha broke it down so that we can look at ourselves. How can you emancipate yourself from suffering without knowing who you are and what you make up of? Now this is how you and I will make up of. And then we take a look at more. In the matter, we have eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. This body, of course, is not just a body. It includes the internal organs of the body. And then we also have the mind, which is perception, conception, volition, and consciousness. And this we call the six organs. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 organs, the material organs. And then when these six organs that we have, we interact with the outside world, all these objects that we interact, eye with matter, ear with sound, and all the nose with smell, tongue with taste, and body with touch, and mind with all mental objects that we think of, the past, the present, and the future. We create images in our mind. We create illusions in our mind. So that's the objects that we create. And when we interact with these objects, what happens? The six consciousnesses arises. The eye consciousness, the ear, nose, tongue, body, and the manas consciousness, which is this egoistic consciousness, arises. We're living in the 18 realms, the interactive 18 realms. We're living in there. We are the 18 realms. And when we are interacting like that in the 18 realms, at the same time, a lot of mental functions come up in us. not just interaction. What are these mental functions? We call it the 56 mental functions. And some of these, just to give examples, is jealousy, hatred, depression, arrogance, selfishness, shamelessness, anger, hatred, you name all those at the same time. And when you are interacting in the 18 realms, when you're interacting in the 18 realms in your daily life, it's not that simple. You are creating karmic energy. Every thought, every bad thought, every good thought, every action, creating karmic energy that bound you. That's the reason why some people suffer. Some people die early, some people healthy, some people unhealthy, some people are rich, some people are poor. You created your own destiny and you don't know about it. You've been creating your good or bad or neutral destiny. Don't blame God, don't blame parents, don't blame the society, don't blame all these things. You creating your destiny. And you only blame others for what you suffer. But don't you know that you're doing it yourself? Well, this is only give you a general idea. Now, we call that the Sanskrit, which lead us to stay in samsara, because a Sanskrit, and I will further tell you what a Sanskrit is, it's a Sanskrit word, which leads us to stay in samsara, in life and death. How do we liberate ourselves from samsara? The Buddha said, liberate yourself from samsara. Don't go through life and death anymore. If you don't do that, you'll be always in life and death. Yeah, you are very compassionate this life. You're helping, you're donating all your money out, but that would put you in a better human realm in your next life. You're still in suffering because you are not getting out from samsara. So you have to learn what the Buddha taught you to get out from samsara. Not just being a good man, a good woman, not enough. A good man and good woman would only qualify you to go to heaven, and you still die after you enjoy what is in heaven. Heaven is not the ultimate way to go. You still died, but you enjoy millions of years of longevity, millions of years of quote-unquote happiness, you still die. The Buddha said that's not the ultimate way to go. You have to transcend heavens. Heaven is only to award those good people. You're a good person. It's an award to you to go to heaven. But don't go there. Become nirvana. Going there, you enjoy the happiness, and after the happiness is all enjoy, the karmic energy of good karmic is used up, you still go back to life and death. Suffer again. So don't think about going to heaven. Of course, it's better to go to heaven than hell, but heaven is not the ultimate way to go. It's only to award you for all the goods that you have done. From samsara to nirvana, from Sanskrit to Asanskrit. What is Sanskrit? All things that are conditioned or brought into being by contributing causes and subject to the laws of impermanence, causation, and rebirth. This relates to samsara and applies to anything that bears the characteristics of arising, duration, decay, and disappearance. That's a universal law. Everything arises, becomes into being. It's sustained for a certain time, and it starts to turn bad, and finally, it's gone. Even you, your body is subject to that. Your body has been given birth to you. You're born, assuming that is arising, coming to being. You sustain your life for a while. It starts to change. You start to get old. You start to get sick. And you start to be sick, and then you die. You're going through arising, duration, decay, and disappearance. Not just the body. Everything, every neutron, every atom, every element is going through life and death. It's going through changeability, changing. No exception. That is universal law. Nothing is unchanging. Your husband and wife today We don't know 20 years later, no more relationship because one would pass away earlier than the others. You have a good family. You think a thick family would stay all the time? You have a good business. You have a good company. Everything will wind up to nothing. There's not just negative. That's a universal law, and you attach to permanence. Oh, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to cheers. Here's a bottle of whiskey. And here, cheers. Here's a steak. Cheers. Here's lobsters. You're killing your, you're doing all, committing all this karmic energy. You don't know about it. You don't know impermanence. You know about impermanence, but you live as if everything is permanent. Everything, everybody knows about impermanence, but your interaction, your thinking, you don't know about it. You're getting onto permanence. Everybody knows about causation, but when things come up, you're still attached to causation. You're attached to someone treating you not nicely. You're still attached to being selfish. You're still attached to being arrogant. You're still being attached to ego, your ego. You don't know about it because thought comes so delicate. Oh, I'm a good person. I'm a philanthropist. But in the minute little world, in your mental world, you are still egoistic. You may not know about it. The time when you really know about the minute little defects in you is the time when you are in meditation. Sometime when you are in meditation, all your defects, all your karmic energy magnify. You can see it. Wow, I'm like this. You're overwhelmed with these emotions. So if you haven't got to that level, that means you are not in a meditative state that you are in a higher level. Meditation exposes all your weaknesses and it forces you to change. Meditation is not just, oh, I'm enjoying, I'm at peace. Oh, I have comfort. That's just scratching the surface of meditation. Meditation is to open up your basement of garbage and let you clean it up. By the time you open that cellar, all the stinky garbages, you got depressed. There must be a guru who tells you, don't depress. Let go of the stinkiness. Start to clean it up. Okay? Now that's Sanskrita. And then Asamskrita, changing from Sanskrita to Asamskrita, things that are conditioned without arising, duration, decay, and disappearance, absence of all conceptualization and emotions, freedom from samsara, and complete liberation from suffering. A synonym for nirvana. Nirvana is not subject to the laws of impermanence, causation, and rebirth. Nirvana is the place that we should go to. The Buddha has gone there already in nirvana. The Buddha came back 2,500 years ago and told us how to get there. A lot of Bodhisattvas, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, Sirigappa Bodhisattva, Samanapatra Bodhisattva, Manjushri Bodhisattva, they all came back to tell us this is the path to go to nirvana. Who have been listening? Who have been following? It's not easy to get to nirvana. An arahat, after practicing in this life, becoming an arahat, he entered into nirvana. But he still keeps a body. That is not parinirvana. Parinirvana is when his body is shut off, no more burden than his in nirvana. So there's a parinirvana. In other words, when the Buddha 2,600 years ago, he became the Buddha, but he still lived to introduce the Buddha's teaching to the whole world. He still maintained a body. But by the time that he thought, my time is up, I already have finished my mission, I've got to go, then he would dial out this body and get into nirvana. So there's a parinirvana and a nirvana. All right, so these are the things that we always have to remember. Now, when we say meditation, now leading back to where we are now, when we are in meditation, before we get to the first jhana, in this world with desires, we could have two samadhi at the high level. Right now, the way we're meditating, you're meditating just on a Saturday. If you go home and you don't do anymore, and you are not a fervent meditators, you just do it haphazardly, you never would have achieved this. Even this is not easy to achieve. This is when you have the direct thought evaluation. When you have direct thought, that means it means that you keep directing your thought to the breath. You keep directing your thought to the breath. You already have increased your focus in meditation. If I can give you an example, you are, when I hit the gong, dong, you first hear the vibrating sound of the bell. Just first hear it. I can give you an example as a bird flying. The bird first stretch out its wings and start to take off. You have a focus. You have a focus. And then evaluation is, it covers several activities. Sustaining your focus, improving and evaluate your focus yourself. You have the pleasurable comfort feeling. The breath energy permeates into every part of the body. You increase your awareness. It's like in the vibrating example, you continuously hear the vibrating sound. If the bird, in the bird's flying example, you have already taken off, your wings are already out. That's evaluation. You're at a higher level. Your focus has increased. Very few people have arrived at this evaluation. So you always have the direct thought. You increase the focus, you arrive at evaluation. Usually, if I can just give a general example, these people meditate for 3 hours per day at least, 4 hours per day. Some people meet 6-7 hours per day. Then they have direct thought, they have focus, they have evaluation. That, these two, these are the factors. If you meditate for 3-4 hours per day, you know, then you get comfort. In other words, you're so comfortable that you don't want to leave your meditation. If you have that comfort, you won't give up your meditation for millions of dollars. If somebody say, I want to give you $5 million, can you give me your meditation? You don't want to. To you, money is nothing anymore. Materiality is nothing anymore. Your happiness is not a material anymore. You have that comfort. And then you continue to increase this level, you will get to what? You still have the direct thought, you still have the evaluation, you have a rapture, which is much higher. You have rapture. You have joy. You have a little bit of stillness of mind. You already have your stillness of mind, your focus has increased, that you have this stillness of mind in you. You not only have comfort, you have a little bit of rapture, of joy, pitti in the Sanskrit language, and you also have sukha, which is the joy. But this is only preliminary and sporadic. When you are at this, you can arrive at this kind of samadhi. You are still in this world of desire. You are ready to go into the first jhana. When you go into the first jhana, you are a different person. For people who have been meditating for years, maybe 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you are here. But don't discourage that it may take you another 15, 20 years. For some people who have been practicing in the previous life, it may take them 5 months, maybe a year. It depends on who you are. If you've been practicing for many lives before, it could take you 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then you reach to the first jhana. Now, this is before getting to the first jhana. Now, next time we'll talk about what do we do, how do we feel in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana. If you arrive at this, maybe many people arrive at the first jhana, second jhana, and third jhana. You are close to a saint level because you all realize these five mental factors. You have direct thought, you have evaluation, you have rapture, you have joy, and you have stillness of mind. All these is completed. All these you already have completed. You totally get all these. And then, in the next time, After you arrive at the first jhana, then how do you get? Well, how do people get to the second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana? Now, even if you in this life you arrive at the first jhana, sometimes you may lose it. Say that if you are a monk, you already have arrived at the first jhana, but sometimes you have to go out to teach, and then you interact with other people, then your karmic habitual energy came back, you may lose your first jhana. Because say, for example, if this monk interact with ladies, for example, because he'd been karmically built up kamadhatu habits, he may tend to talk to the ladies more, for example, or, oh, this is a beautiful lady, or all of a sudden he may lose the first jhana, and he had to do it again to get the first jhana. Or if his greediness is so much that this monk has been preaching, and then somebody said, can I donate it to you, a $20 million land so that you can build a temple on it? All of a sudden, it becomes so greedy. Yeah, I can build a good temple, and somebody donated me $20 million. Of course, I'd accept it. And all of a sudden, you build up fame and reputation in your mind, some greediness in your mind, and then you lose your first jhana. And you get into attaching to temples, fame, reputation. So you're an abbot of the biggest temple, which is worth 500 million. So all of a sudden you feel so overwhelmed with all these things, you may have lost your first jhana. So you may lose it. You get it, you lose it. And for some people, they may lose it in the first year and then, I have built this temple. I don't need it anymore. I will continue, but I'm not attaching it to it anymore. And then he got back to the first jhana. I built this temple not for building up my reputation and fame. I built this temple to benefit all the others. Some people build a temple without attaching to it. They're always in the first jhana. You understand? So you may lose it, okay? Now, we go into the second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana next time.